The predictions were that we'd all be gone by now, or at least lost somewhere in the digital matrix. But don't believe everything you read. Print is not dead, and we've assembled some of the brightest minds in publishing to tell you why today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. We have a very special edition coming up for you today. Earlier this week, Monocle held its very first Media Summit, an assembly of some of the brightest minds in print media from around the world. We'll hear from one of the panel discussions that took place in a moment. But first, I'm joined by some other print luminaries, Monocle's editor, Andrew Tuck, and Monocle's culture editor, Robert Bound, both magazine aficionados and both hosts at the inaugural summit. Andrew, I'll come to you first of all. What was the thinking behind the timing of the summit and to do it now? Obviously, we've long celebrated all things print. Was it slightly a reaction to this now rather tiresome notion that people constantly say that print is dead or dying? Did we want to sort of robustly answer people who still make that view known?
All of the above, and also make sure that people notice it was our 10th birthday. So that was that, and then have a good drink afterwards. No, what's interesting is, actually, that phrase, print is dead, and old and new media, I don't really hear it talked about anymore. Mm. And I think that that's the reason we did this. You know, there's been a shift in the discussion. 5 years ago, if you rocked up at most media HQs that were putting out print products, you'd go to the boardroom and you'd meet certain executives who looked like they might want to jump out the window any minute. And actually, 5 years later, and people have felt their way, especially in magazines, around all of the issues that they were contemplating, you know, not always finding the perfect solution, but they seem to be heading back into profit. They have found new ways of extending their brands and reaching people which are, you know, clever, intuitive for what they're doing. And just that doom has gone out the room. Yeah, it's not the same in the head offices of many newspapers, but for magazines it's changed. And we just wanted to acknowledge that because, you know, here we were on a day where, you know, a large tech company that's never made a penny and no one knows how it will was, you know, valued at a stupid amount of money. But then there's all these media companies making actually great profits every day and doing extraordinary stuff that don't get the spotlight put on them.
And Rob, I guess, you know, it's interesting, you're a stalwart on Monocle 24 Radio, but there's something important, isn't there, about having a printed product that remains at the heart of what you do. I mean, as a journalist, I guess we're all part of a generation that, you know, it's what's on the printed page really that kind of defines your craft and defines your art, really.
Yeah, I don't think I could do this without having the background in magazines and in writing, and knowing how to do it on paper, I guess, helps you do it on radio. But having said, talking about the conference yesterday, it was so nice speaking to kind of, despite some of the people on the panel being young guns like Francesco Franchi, the graphic designer who's kind of rebranded La Repubblica and taken it to the top of the charts in the Italian in a competitive Italian newspaper environment. He's a guy in his 20s and he's cool. Well, I was very jealous of his hair, but
he won't stop going on about that.
No, he's a lean man with a kind of a good profile, a Roman nose, you could say, and a good haircut, a good barnet. But it was nice seeing grown-ups on the stage, is what I was going to say, and people not using buzz phrases, not using the word of the day, the language of kind of the language of tomorrow. People just talking about the product that they make, not even using the word content, talking about stories. We were talking about stories yesterday from Lindsay Dario and Lise Doucette on the final panel, talking about photography, current affairs, war reporting. To the editor of Paris Match, an urbane man who's seen a lot of all sorts of things, from royal weddings to the war in Syria. People were talking about stories. It was really nice, refreshing to have a lack of buzzwords.
And Andrew, it's interesting, isn't it? Because some people still sort of suggest that you're a bit old-fashioned if you talk about stories and if you talk about stories in print. But actually, it was particularly interesting yesterday to hear, whether it was talking about books and the, you know, big publishing houses or news media, weekly news. There's a lot of innovation there. This wasn't old school in that sense. And actually, you can do traditional things well and still be very creative in terms of your business model and your innovative approach to your work.
Yeah, we had a rattle through 20 benchmarks, and there we looked at Stern in Germany, that's taken a dip into crime, produce a special magazine that's then become a theatre show, selling out to 3,000 people every single night. We looked at a company that's making a nice interiors magazine, but actually is making 100 million euros plus from its paint sales.
I mean, that's diversification.
Yeah, yeah, all those things are like fascinating. But, you know, coming back to what you say about stories, I thought one of the most amazing things was, you know, as Olivia Royon said, you know, we're in a world of, you know, people claiming there's fake news, you know, stopping us getting to the truth. And he pointed out that never before, well, often before, that's a lie, but, you know, at this moment, we definitely need people who can sift the facts, tell the stories, present information in a way that is convincing. It's good for our democracy. It's good for how we relate to each other. And it's never been more important. It's not about content. This is about stuff that really changes people's lives.
And it's seeing itself in sales. Alec Russell, the editor of the FT Weekend, was saying that very thing. And I think the same with the Parry Match. And you've seen that with the newspaper subscriptions in Italy. And that's just the first panel. All those three guys were talking about people going back to these trusted news brands and wanting the real story, the truth, because people are fed up with wondering about the veracity of their Facebook feed.
Yeah, Olivia Royon from Parry Match, he said a really interesting thing. He said, you know, that there was a few years ago, there was a space created as, you know, the traditional media brands kind of like, you know, felt thumped in the face and stepped back. And into that gap came a load of brands that are actually really useless at doing news. Mm. And actually, the gap has been retaken by legacy brands because they're just very good at doing news.
And there was some nice discussion throughout various panels about focus on the craft of this, whether it's the craft of writing, the craft of design, and the craft of editing. And I guess this speaks to what you're both just saying there about how much white noise there is, and people saying, oh, well, you know, we don't need to send journalists out anymore because we can just go on Twitter and you find out quicker what's happening. But there's something about work that is authentic, that's designed to endure and be permanent. And there's definitely something, Rob, about work that's been edited, and you know, you don't want to blow your own trumpet as an editor, but it's important that somebody
sending
is really
someone somewhere
caring for,
sending
it.
Someone somewhere to do a job, a writer and a photographer to go and do a job and bring something back. It's a job of work. It's a serious thing. You know, whether you're writing about a music festival, whether you're writing about a war, you know, it's dispatches, and it's seriously important. People take that job seriously. I think as soon as you water it down, and someone has to, or you know, this is the problem with what I haven't even heard this phrase for 2 or 3 years, but citizen journalism. But still, you know, even BBC Rolling News and Sky News are full up with jerky mobile phone shots of things, and this isn't just like we've got some evidence. This isn't evidence for a court. This is stuff that goes on mainstream TV news channels. The idea of sending someone off to go and do a job of work and bring back the best that they possibly can to enlighten the reader or the listener, is not such an old-fashioned thing. It's what all those kind of lesser communications brands are all after, I guess.
Rob's panel was about the book is back. And as the panelists pointed out, it actually hadn't gone anywhere in the first place, but it was quite a good title. And James Daunt, who was on the panel, he runs his own eponymous chain of bookstores here in London, but he also heads up the UK-wide chain Waterstones. And he was...
Which is 280 shops.
280 shops.
Boy, yeah.
Brought in to run it at a time when it was losing tens of millions of pounds. And it's just posted a very nice £10 million profit. And he's done that in a few years. And... Yeah, we chatted to him at the event, but afterwards we caught up over dinner and I was asking him about how that had happened. And he said it's quality. It's, you know, we put the book managers at the front of the line and choosing what they wanted to sell. They celebrate the book. You know, we've gone back to the printed page. And the other interesting fact which he told to the audience was that the best book sales at the moment are up 30% over the last couple of years are to teenagers. Teenagers are the big growth market. Now, here's people who are, you know, of course they're kind of using Snapchat and they have Facebook and they have every device known to man, but they also want to turn the page.
I guess, Rob, we were pretty unabashed about saying that we're striking a positive note. We celebrate print, we celebrate quality, we celebrate investment in journalism, this kind of thing. Do you think that the, I don't know what you call them, delegates or guests who were in London earlier in
punters.
The week? The punters.
I like a punter, yeah.
Did they walk out of that room having been... challenged, having heard things which will reassure them too that maybe, you know, print is here to stay and that you know, good media brands can make good profits.
Yeah,
and
I think
still
so.
Hire good journalists and so on.
I hope so. People had questions about that, you know, because we wanted obviously to not just talk about the art and the loveliness of a bit of paper with some ink on it, and how nice our jobs are, and you know, as hard work as they are, that they are rewarding and all the rest of it. But we wanted to tackle the business models as well, and we wanted to make sure that it made sense that we've proven as a print and a radio brand that we can make money, that we can employ, you know, 150 people, that we can become something that was 9 people 10 years ago as we celebrate our 10th birthday this week. That it's a going concern, that it's not just about, ooh, smell the paper, crack the spine, all these lovely things, which with the fetishization of it is fine. I almost got through that word intact. But actually it has to make sense. It has to keep people in jobs, and it has to give people a bit of a ladder up.
And Andrew, maybe just finally, I mean, there was a celebratory note in the air because of the 10th birthday of Monaco.
And all the wine.
And a fair few glasses of wine knocking around. I don't know anything about that. But, you know, you must be proud as well. I mean, it's interesting, you know, we both worked at a newspaper that had its struggles and then ended up, you know, going off the scene altogether. It must be amazing to look through this building and look at events like the Media Summit this week and see what can still be achieved.
Yeah, you know. Proud makes you sound a bit paternal, and I don't mean it in that sense, but, you know, proud of what, you know, all of us have achieved over the past decade, and also proud of what lies ahead. You know, that it feels, you know, a building full of possibilities, whether we're looking at book publishing, whether we're looking at radio, whether we're looking at film, whether we're looking at the way that we meet our readers. All of those things we've finessed in a way which I'm super excited to see how they unfold over another decade.
Can I just say also that just in terms of the conference, all those people were so good at telling their story, were so good at communicating. They were funny, they were wise, they had experience, even if they were young. It was so good. I'd never been to anything that is. I can't imagine the online version of something like that. You know, communication is all about digital. We were saying it was all about paper, or that do not disregard paper. I can't imagine the ideas and the idea of being footloose and fancy free, entertaining and erudite all at once. I'm not blowing smoke up all of their posteriors, but I tell you what, it felt like a really interesting and interested room to be in.
And a footnote to the footnote, we haven't actually mentioned Lise Doucette from the BBC and Lindsay Adari, an amazing war correspondent. They finished the day, and there was a crackle in that room. So there, you know, we had Edge of Your Seats, Terrors, she told about, Lindsay spoke about being kidnapped. We had the excitement of what happens on page. We heard about the best infographics. It was an amazing, amazing afternoon, if I say so ourselves.
And also, just a final takeaway, Andrew made an unlaboured, perfect sausage mustard metaphor.
I wondered if this was going
about publishing, and I don't know whether this is a pre-Watershed program, Tom, but I mean, maybe he'd like to trot it out.
Rob, we won't do that, because I did say yesterday no one's having my sausage.
Well, let's hear some of what was said at the Monaco Media Summit this week. We've been hearing all about it already from Andrew and Rob. They were on the panel too, alongside Monaco's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, discussing the reality of print news today. Alec Russell, editor of the FT Weekend, Francesco Franchi, managing editor of La Repubblica, and Olivier Royon, editor-in-chief of Paris Match, were all on the panel. Let's jump in.
Alec, I'm going to start with you. We're talking about, is money still on paper? And I know, and you know as well, that I, aside from writing the column, I'm also running a customer service desk for the FT when it comes to all of our readers around the world who are upset if they're in a ski resort, or they're on a beach, or they're in a suburb of Chicago, and they can't get their copy of the printed paper. How important is the good old pink paper to the core of what the FT brand as a whole does, but also the Weekend FT?
Well, one of the things that the editor of the FT, my boss, didn't tell me when he asked me if I wanted to become Weekend editor was that there'd be a new ritual in my weekend, which would be the email from Tyler, which would be from one of our subscribers saying, here I am in Tucson, Arizona, here I am, or whatever. I can't read your column, Tyler. Tyler says, I will speak to the editor, he will fix it. Well, it's not quite that simple, as we know, because print is no longer as monolithic as it once was. We no longer print in as many places as we used to. And, of course, as many of you will know, even by the standards of the last decade when the digital media have been raiding very successfully the previous print strongholds. Last year was a shocker for print. I can't deny it. Before I come to the sunlit uplands, last year was very bad news for traditional print newspapers. Why? Because print is no longer as monolithic as it once was. We no longer print in as many places as we used to. And of course, as many of you will know, even by the standards of the last decade when the digital media have been raiding very successfully the previous print strongholds, last year was a shocker for print. I can't deny it. Before I come to the sunlit uplands, last year was very bad news for traditional print newspapers. Why? Because the traditional funding model, the great advertisement, has been shifting even more rapidly to social media. What is the conclusion we've made at the FT? The conclusion is, yes, of course, the future, the long-term future is digital, but we shouldn't conclude that there's only one pathway for print, namely downhill. There can be two different paths. So this is where, happily for me, The Weekend comes into the picture. The Weekend readership, I can exclusively reveal new figures from today, it went up last year.
Let's have a round of applause for that, ladies and gentlemen.
That, of course, is primarily because the new editor has taken his Fastlane columnist in hand and upped the quality of the column, and suddenly readers have noticed. But more seriously, I think it reflects that people, say, at the weekends, are happy to pay for print. They want a serious, thoughtful read, and they want to sit back during the week. As we know, by and large, people consume their news more on their tablets and on their iPhones. So there are different strands here. Print can't be your only answer, and I'm now realizing that if you're an editor, you not only edit proofs of pages, you also have to look over videos. The video people come to me and say, are you happy with this video? The podcast people come to me and say, are you happy with this podcast? The events people come to me and say, what's the great event you're going to run next month, the month after? But there is still money in print.
Francesco, I wanted to ask you a question because you've been lured from Milan to Rome to work on a newspaper. We often get concerned when we go to see publishers around the world and they say to us, look, here's our chart. This is what's going to happen to the print product over the next 10 years. And they'd already decided that they'd given up the game. And then they'll show you a flip chart of how the revenue is going to zoom up for their digital advertising. This certainly happened 4 or 5 years ago. We now pop along to people and they're saying, yeah, kind of. We've managed to run the print product down, but we certainly haven't pulled people across into digital. And we always say it's because there's no invention with paper. Now, you're doing exactly that. You've only been there a short while, but you've already brought out a new Sunday cultural supplement, Robinson. Could you tell us why La Repubblica still believes in paper and what it's trying to do with Robinson?
I think, in general, the all the Italian market is still believing in paper because revenues comes again from paper. We would like to design a new product. We would like to design Robinson, that is the new Sunday supplement of La Repubblica, and we like to design it like a magazine. So try to change a bit the paradigm of the typical supplement, Sunday supplement in Italy, that are La Lettura from Il Corriere and Il Domenicale from Il Sole 24 Ore. And we wanted to create a product that can reach also young people that they have my age. So we try to work a lot with the type, with the core, with the images, with the illustration. We try to combine different languages, and we try to create a sort of magazine, so with a rhythm, with a different flow respect to the other supplement.
And just one tiny thing that I think the most extraordinary thing is, Francesca said that when they came to design it, they decided a retro look was correct because that's what would connect with younger readers. You were looking at the people who were buying LPs again, that often the print product could actually be super cool for a generation of people who hadn't actually really been involved with it before.
And I just want to say as well, in the spirit of being tactile, we have a proper show-and-tell table. So there are some Robinsons here, but afterwards we've got examples of all of the titles that you're going to be hearing about today as well. I want to jump over to Paris, Olivier. An extraordinary news year, particularly in France, and also what lies ahead right now. What value, in terms of a media brand, a weekly title, does print play? Is there a cut-through that Paris Match still has versus the TV networks, versus digital-only upstarts, and of course radio also being very important in France as well. I'm wondering, how important is it that you are still present on paper, as much as you're doing many things digitally as well?
I would say, first of all, I'm very happy to be with you today. Thank you for having us today. Like every readers of magazine, I am a fan of two magazines. I like Monocle, and I like to read the FT on the weekend. There is something that you didn't say about the FT, about the success of the FT on the weekend, is that WED, writing, editing, and design. The work we have been, these three elements make magazine and print wonderful objects. We should never forget that a magazine starts with being an object. It's part of your private time. You're bringing with you on the beach, on the toilet, everywhere you want. It's with you. It's a private time. And it's an extraordinary privilege for publishers and editors like us to be able to be part of the private time of the people. When you are being harassed with this object 24 hours or 18 hours a day. Every month, I go on the field and I meet with the people who are waking up every morning at 4 o'clock or 4:30 to distribute magazine in France. In Germany and in France, we still manage to have these networks of people, of newsstands. We have 25,000 newsstands in France, and that, to answer your question, Tyler, did give, when Paris Match is being closed on Tuesday morning, we hit the newsstand on Thursday, and we have this big impact, like a TV, like a big TV show. So the print lasts, and the print has this impact, this direct impact. It's funny, because sometimes people are very careful about talking on the print because they believe that their world will remain when they're ready to talk on some website or some TV show. When it comes to giving an interview on the print, they would be very fearful because their words will remain written. So I don't pay too much attention to the stories being written about the decline of the print because it's more complicated than that. Now we start being able to dig up pieces that were written 15 years ago, 10 years ago, that would say by 2018 there won't be any magazine or newspaper in the world. We will be all dead. We are not dead, and we are not in the hospice either. What I would say is that, for example, on some segments, we find out in France that there is a major market for special issues. We will make special issues on different areas: health, travel, politics, history, and there is a market for this. And this is a new market, so which means we can identify in the print business some new segments that are actually delivering growth, and it's good news.
Alec, do you recognize that point? Because I think we look around the world and we see it didn't all run in one direction. So I always give the example. I'm always amazed when we're in the coffee shop and somebody is waiting for their drip filter coffee and they're happy to wait 20 minutes and they want to know where the bean came from. But actually, at the very same time, they're doing this. So they're taking in their world at two speeds. They're very good at taking fast media, slow media. And I wonder with the weekend FT, you know, people who thought it would vanish, when you look at something like How to Spend It, just the revenue that brings into your newspaper is there forever, isn't it?
What, the revenue's there forever?
Well,
I don't think anyone dares assume that any revenue stream is there,
the
is product, there forever.
The products that bring
That's
in
why
that.
Andrew's not in the finance team.
The products that bring in that luxury revenue.
Well, I certainly hope so, because it's no secret that How to Spend It is very important for the all-round package that is the weekend FT. But I do think that you made an exceptionally good point about quality. We're just finishing off a new marketing campaign for the Weekend FT, which is launched in 2 weeks' time, global campaign, particularly focused on Paris, actually Paris, Hong Kong, and LA, to give it that sort of the global sweep, but also the UK. And we've been speaking to a lot of our readers in the countdown to this, just to ask them about the weekend. And the overwhelming message that comes back is we look to you for, several of them said independently, nourishment of the soul, nourishment of the heart. We like this as a lean back, unashamedly highbrow, even intellectual experience. And I think that directly speaks to what you're saying about a sort of an antidote to the whatever you call it, the sort of fast-paced digital world. But it's also a reminder that people are prepared to pay for quality. And if you are producing an unashamedly classy product that's well edited, the power of the edited word, it's been massively undervalued, but I think it's coming in now in the era of so-called fake news. You keep your subscribers, you keep your customers.
I would say, and now I'm going to be a little politically incorrect because I'm among friends. What I would say is that we can feel over the last years, the amazing thing is that the new media outlet, they were not really capable of occupying the vacant space left by the print if the print is declining. And it's a very important sense. You've heard about this French upcoming presidential election, major national psychodrama. We don't know where we are going. We may end up with a French version of Trump, or we may end up with a more classical version. It's a disruption, everything you've heard of that. The key element is that the whole story was brought up by Le Canard Enchaîné. Le Canard Enchaîné was created in 1915. Mm-hmm. And the whole campaign is surrounding about a story being revealed by a newspaper that doesn't have any website, that doesn't have any Instagram account, and that doesn't have any Facebook account. And I think there is something that we should mention today. Print is equating to quality, and it's also a symbol of veracity, of truth. And at some point, we are going to be, in the year to come, in this environment of fake news, we are going to be coming the apostle or the pioneers of truth. We are going to have to market what is our core values and the value of our brand, which is truth. And it's very important. It's like we were joking before, but I would say it's like truth is like a vitamin B. It's good for your body. And we have to, and that's the way we're going to have to tell readers. And it's very important because now we used to be talking about business models. I mean, where are we going? How much money are we making? And suddenly we are talking about politics. What is our role in the middle of our society? And what is our role in the middle of this extraordinary, crazy environment created by the social media? I think print remain these brands. Remain a beacon, and they remain a very important anchor for the people.
Just a word of warning. They said it's still 2 weeks till that campaign comes out of the FT. So if that vitamin B2 thing comes up as part of the FT's campaign, make sure Lagardère sends an invoice. I just want to go to back to Rome for a moment. When Andrew was talking a little bit earlier about sort of this retro sort of look and feel, I mean, we know so often there's so much focus groups done. There's so much, looking at a cover 1,000 times. And I think most of us up here know there's also not a lot of science to it. You're always constantly amazed what sells and what doesn't. How much of a discussion was there in sort of the build-up to launch something like Robinson? Was it a gut reaction on the part of the editor-in-chief and the board of the paper, or how did it evolve?
No, We didn't analyze a focus group or something like that because I think I was very lucky because since the beginning they gave me a lot of freedom. And so thanks to Mario Calabrese, that is the editor-in-chief, and to Angelo Rinaldi, the art director. And that was good because, of course, the newsroom of La Repubblica was used to work in a different way. So the previous Sunday supplement was for every spread there was a story. In this way, we changed the way of thinking of a newspaper. So there was also a lot of work in about the workflow inside the newsroom. So design sometimes doesn't mean also only to design layout or to organize the content, but means also to organize the workflow inside the newsroom. So I was lucky because then I had a lot of freedom, like I had before in Tirsor 24 Ore with Il Magazine. So they trust in my work, and I was lucky.
Andrew, we've noticed some of these creative directors like a bit of freedom, don't they?
Well, that Richard Spencer Powell does, but he doesn't always get it.
He's back at his desk as well, getting the next issue out.
Alec, I wanted to ask you, just jumping back on this point, we're talking about truth. When we look at the newspapers and magazines that we like, many of them are doing extraordinarily well at the moment. So we've just looked at our radio figures. It's the highest we've ever had. And in part, we're pretty sure it's because of something we're not so sure about, which is Brexit, something we're not so sure about, Mr. Trump. Do those big news stories really boost your numbers at this time and give you a kind of credibility. You know, we're seeing in the New York Times, the Washington Post, all market themselves as beacons of truth in a very difficult time.
Brexit was a huge boost to our subscriber base. We hoped it would be. Not that we hoped there'd be Brexit. I think it's pretty clear where the FT stood on Brexit. But we thought that the great debate would lead to an increase, but we were stunned at how sizable that was. So for our digital subscriptions, that was great. For our print subscriptions, didn't have so much of an impact. So these were new people coming to us looking for a trusted voice. Trump, not so much so, but then I guess we are still seen as being broadly a European news organization. We have reasonable circulation in the US and in Asia, and are increasing our digital subscribers globally, but nonetheless, our heart is in Europe. So people interested in Brexit, they come to us. People looking for the meaning of Trump, I guess they still go to the New York Times. But they too, as you said, saw a huge boost.
Olivier, it was quite interesting. We had lunch in Paris some months ago, and we were chatting, and at one point you pulled out your phone and you showed me an app for, I think there's an IPO for a big social media company today, and you're one of the first companies to be working with Snapchat on a project. And at that point, you were saying it was a hungry beast that you had to feed. And I'm wondering, what is the social versus sort of daily digital versus what you have to do in terms of video and also getting the magazine out to deadline and out on the streets for the end of the week? What does that metabolism look like now? I mean, in a way, Alec was saying, here as an editor, he's got to look at sort of myriad channels as well. And I'm wondering, how do you prioritize when you have this Paris-Match brand?
I think it's key. It's not the print that is dying. It's us who are dying because we now working from 7 o'clock to in the morning until the end of the, and on different platforms. I just wanted to show you something. This is the Discover Snapchat this morning. So it's what is interesting is on this screen of Discover, you really have I would say legacy meeting trendy. You have Paris Match, Vice, L'Equipe, Melty, Combini, Le Monde. Unbelievable. I mean, this guy, they didn't expect us to be with there today. And it's very interesting because what we are saying, it's not, I mean, the social media are bringing you in absolutely uncharted territory. Our middle age, the average age of people reading Paris Match is about 53. The average age of the 600,000 people we are reaching on Snapchat every day are between 16 and 22. So how do you manage? I mean, and these people are looking for truth also. They are looking for real stuff, real news. So how do you manage to tailor these different formats for different audience on one basis? We are going back to what I was saying before. I mean, this concept of WED, writing, editing, design. Now a story has to be designed with the journalist, but it has to be profiled before it is being launched. For example, we're going to Mosul. We are in Mosul right now. We had a conversation with the team on the site in Mosul to say, oh, are we going to be able to distribute this story on the different platform on different formats? And I think that's brand new. And what Snapchat did to us. It was the first project where we couldn't have any reference in print. I mean, in print, we always, like any human being, we always try to redo what you know to do. With Snapchat, you have to forget what you used to do. The long format, it's a 7 seconds. The story starts with 7 seconds. And it's like, it's amazing. We say, oh, we don't have any problem with the covers right now. No, you're wrong. You have 10 snaps in the morning, and if you don't get the attention of the people on the two first snaps, then you lose them. Like if you don't manage to have a good cover, you can sell your magazine. It's amazing to see that this phenomenon are traveling from one platform to another. I think the good thing about print, we used to be afraid of this platform. We used to be afraid of this social media because as print, as coming from the, you're coming from the new world, I'm going from the old world. We were absolutely frightened of being competing with this format. I think we have been learning for the last 3 or 4 years about being able to design different formats and to have different life for one story. And it's a major progress that came that happened in most of the brands we are talking about today. And it's good because the story today is being able on one day to have to start the day with a second 7 second story and expand it on the print later. I mean, that's good.
Just one short footnote to that, though. Just tell me, what concerns us is we look at lots of newspapers who have millions and millions of clicks and likes and followers, but are losing a ton of money every week because they have such huge digital teams that are bringing in no revenue. Just for you, is the money still in the print magazine or is it through Snapchat?
Oh, right now, the money is still in the print magazine. I mean, this money is about this hundred of thousands of people buying 2.8 euro every week to get their magazine. That's where the money comes from. That's where the cash comes from, also from the advertisers. But for the first time with Snapchat, we get at least, I mean, with Facebook or Google, they won't even talk to you. And with Apple, they won't even tell you who is downloading your app. With Snapchat, we have a good conversation. I mean, if Facebook is a lake, Snapchat is like a rapid river. I mean, you see stuff going under your eyes all the time. And what is interesting with Snapchat is that they propose you a business model. I mean, you are sharing every single money that's being put into the system, and it's a closed system, which is good for us because we are used to this closed system. We don't like to tell somebody, oh, what will you do on my website? Why don't you go and visit some other website? No, we like closed system, and with Snapchat, that's what we find, and there are some similarities with what we do. So we have a young team. We have 5 people working on Snapchat. It's amazing because they are this young journalist and this young designer. They are bringing us in the new world, in the new world of storytelling, because they are absolutely eager, and they want to find some good journalism also, and that's the good news for us.
Let's go to the capital of the old world, back to Rome. Has Snapchat even reached Italy yet? I'm just curious.
Not yet.
And on that note, I mean, it's just interesting, you know, when you hear Olivia talk about sort of a young team, with this desire to engage with Robinson and obviously bring in a younger generation. From a design point of view, how much have you had to also think about, you know, the way pages are laid out on this type of screen, for example? I mean, have you really also tried to say that we have to sort of reflect digital design, or, as you cited Andrew backstage a little bit, that this notion of retro, let's just lead with that to pull people in?
No, I don't think there is a sort of competition between old media and new media. But I believe that paper is a sort of luxury, that because you can pay money to buy paper, and paper is related to relaxed time. And so even when you design something, you have to design a real product that is sort of a luxury product. So this is the attention to the quality, to the details. And while you are designing for the digital, at the same time you can design something that can be free, but you can also design something that can be paid. So you can also, for example, you can design in a better way a premium version of your website. You can maybe design it without advertising because your readers are going to pay for your news. And like a designer, you have to think in a sort of relationship between the product and your readership and the user of the product.
Can I just one slight riposte to your point about digital?
I think you've had a few already.
Yeah, and first hands for questions. Okay. We're coming to questions after this. Go ahead.
A third riposte. Yes, you're quite right that digital has not been the hoped for money tree, cash cow, or whatever you ludicrous phrase you want to come up with. But there is the word subscriber that springs to my mind. That's been incredibly important for us, digital subscribers. We may not be getting as much digital advertising as we'd have hoped for, say, 10 years ago when we launched the subscription model, but the subscriber base is incredibly important. So if you build up enough digital subscribers, then you will have a sizable digital revenue. You still, at the moment, need your print advertising as well. It helps, you know, pay for some euros.
And you've believed all along that news is something you should pay for, which is a good thing.
Well, and the other thing I just thought I'd say, just in terms, because you were making some very interesting points about the cultural changes in newsrooms and so on. And in my previous job, I was news editor for the FT, and I was responsible for overseeing the sort of shift to digital. And lots of people would come to me and say, we don't know what we're meant to be doing now, and we're being asked to do short, quick things and deep and slow and fast. And what is this journalism we're doing? And Snapchat didn't exist then, but it was soon. And I concluded that fundamentally it's very simple. It's no different to what Tyler and I were asked to do when we were running around as foreign correspondents in the early mid-90s. Good stuff. Good stuff comes in different forms now, but that's our answer to our journalists. If you do good stuff, whether it is a traditional long-form investigation or it's a really classy visual piece that's going to go out on Instagram, that's what we want.
There's one thing I want to add to what Alec is saying. When I opened the FT on the weekend, there is something key in the experience that we are experiencing with the print. We are excited. I mean, you are excited because you're going to find something new, something surprising in this magazine or in another magazine. I mean, this element of surprise is very important, emotion and surprise. When I started at Paris Match a long time ago, the editor-in-chief said, Olivier, you know how to learn English? Okay, one advice. You read the English paper first and then the French papers, because it will be in the French paper 24 hours later. There is an element of serendipity. It's a complicated word, but it's a beautiful word because that's what print and magazine and newspaper do. They manage to make you discover things that you wouldn't expect to discover. And it's a key element and a very important difference with social networks. People keep on going on the internet to get reassurance of their belief, reassurance of what they know already. They don't want to find new stuff. I mean, magazines and newspapers, they make you find new ideas and critical spirit, which is key for a human being, I think.
Because these gentlemen went over time, there's going to be also two extra prizes. There's a lifetime subscription to the Weekend FT, and also to Paris Match as well.
We're looking for a new columnist on the back page quite soon as well.
Questions from the floor. We have a hand down here, if we can get a microphone there. And maybe can I see a second hand as well? And then we can be lined up with the next question. There's another question, the gentleman in the back, I believe.
And if everyone could just say their name and potentially where they're from, it'd be great. Thank you.
Thanks very much. So my name is Margherita. I come from Italy, and I'm an infographic designer working in London over the last 3 years. My question is, how much do you think is infographic design, data journalism, and illustration potentially important for the survival and even the repositioning of print? And in terms of tips maybe you can give us is how do you balance design and functionality and informative function of your magazine? Do you have any criteria, reference examples, or...
Maybe you need Francesco's book, I think.
Yeah, well, tips can come during cocktails, but okay. Francesco, maybe this. Thanks. I think this notion of sort of data-driven design and what that sort of means for pages. I think a lot of people feel it's just something which is infographic, sort of input into this, you know, beast of a machine, and then comes out on page. And you're really the European maestro on this topic.
Of course, infographic is a new way of telling stories, so it's something that is not a linear way of reading. But I think that in a newspaper, in a magazine, most of all are important the ideas, so the journalistic ideas. Then to convey your story, to convey your ideas, you can use different languages. And the best way is, I think, is to combine all these languages. Maybe you can combine all these languages to create something new again. And of course, I think that the most important aspect is the informative aspect. So, okay, you can create beautiful things, but your beautiful things has to be meaning, has to be an informative aspect. Other way, they have no sense to be in a newspaper. So you always focus on the content. You always focus on the best way to convey your idea, to convey your content.
There's another question. Thanks for that, Francesco. There's another question, gentlemen, there.
Good afternoon. My name is Wojtek. I'm from Index Ventures, a technology investor in a lot of these kind of new digital startups. And I was curious more on the role of personalities and having journalists who kind of you become familiar with, having the opening shot of Simon Cooper and having these people that are writing and have been writing for the same publication for a long time. Because it's my impression that print has that more than kind of digital, the new digital formats where you don't really know the people who are writing the content. But in print, there are a lot of kind of personalities, and New York Times has a lot of writers that just carry, they have their almost own brand. So what's the role? The Economist, for example, doesn't really put bylines, but I think a lot of your publications have journalists who have their own brand in addition to your own company.
We obviously know what Alec is going to say. Columns are incredibly important. So, but we'll come back to you. Olivier, when I think about Paris Match, are there commentators, et cetera, who are also important to drive sales? That someone expects, okay, whatever happens with the Monsieur Fillon this week, that you are going to have someone that they must read next week?
Yeah, I would say that, but for Paris Match, it's a little different. I mean, we don't have this, the brand is more powerful than the people who write in the brand. It's you don't try to compete with Paris Match as a brand. But I would say in politics, for example, especially these days, since the political editor will be writing a piece on Thursday that comes out on Thursday and will be appearing on TV every day. So there is people see him on TV and see them on TV, and they also read them. So there is a level of the level of expectancy is very high. What we like to do is, somebody was talking about being on the ground. I mean, if I take the example of Mosul, it's not important of being in Mosul. It's the person who is following and giving you the experience of covering the Battle of Mosul is more important. So we traditionally, since the 50s, we always have, sometimes I remember the stories of Graham Greene or writers being on the field. We use these names as being able to tell you a story. But I think the phenomenon is less important for magazine and for news weekly than for Paris Match and for other magazine, probably.
Alec, what's the tension, would you say, between the columnists and then also just having to deliver, as you know, Livia's talking about, sort of surprise all the time as well? And what do you see as that sort of, that intersection at the Week NFT?
Well, based on, Tyler will probably for once blush slightly, but genuinely, based on my sort of email inbox on Monday mornings, probably 80% of the messages I get from subscribers are about columnists, are about the latest column they've read, whether it's by Simon Cooper, Tyler, Janan Ganesh, or whoever. And then in these emails, they will then go on to sort of say much more about that particular columnist and why they love them. So does that mean that the remaining 20 or 30% of our content is sort of not so loved? I don't think so, but people like to fasten on to individuals. The column for us, the columnists are an incredibly important part of the FT. I have to say that, Tyler. Even if Tyler wasn't here, I'd say that, because they are the fixtures, and people grow to feel they know them. And take last year we did our first festival, and we had, I don't know, 2,000, few more people coming to Kenwood House in Hampstead. And what people said to me after that was that what they really enjoyed was just meeting the people they'd been reading for so long and listening to them and just chatting with them and so on. They said, this is fantastic. Some people came up to me and said, I've been reading so-and-so for years and I feel I know them, and now I really do know them. So I think there's an extension actually beyond print. I think columnists work very well in a post-print age or in a digital age. I mean, one insight into this, look at how The Economist is now shifting its traditional hard and fast rule that everyone was anonymous. I mean, everyone in The Economist, they tweet out their articles, which are appearing in print, anonymously.
And on that note, we are going to leave it there. A huge thank you to Alec Russell from The Week in FT, Francesco Franchi, of course, from La Repubblica, and Olivier Royon from Paris Match. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you.
That was some of what was said at the Monocle Media Summit this week here in London, and that's all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our producers, Ben Ryland and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and to our editor, Toby Hammond. Any comments or queries are welcome as ever. Drop Fernando a note. You can find him at fp@monocle.com. And do remember to join us at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.